Hello!
Hello! And welcome to Unified Review Theory. I am your host, Neil Cameron.
And I'm your other host, James Cameron. And hey, weird coincidence, we have the same surname.
That's freaky. Are we married or something?
I never thought of that. No, we're not married. No, we're just a couple of guys who like reviewing stuff and then giving it a somewhat arbitrary mark out of 10.
Yes, if this is the first time you've listened to our podcast, which it almost certainly is, if indeed you are listening to it, then you we'll just give you a brief rundown of what we do.
I think it would save time if we take it as read that people are listening to this, because otherwise if we try and address people who will never hear it, then it might get a bit...
It raises some thorny metaphysical issues, doesn't it? If you're listening to this podcast, then you may wish to know the following. So yes, my name's Neil. I'm award-winning, internationally renowned cartoonist Neil Cameron. This is my brother James.
I'm just some guy.
He's just some guy. And we are going to be... Well, for several years now, we've been attempting to review everything in the universe and award it a mark out of 10. Because we are just really anal, or...?
I think it's because, basically, lots of people have wrong opinions about things and how good things are. And so someone needs to basically sort this whole mess out. And I can't think of anyone better qualified than us.
Unfortunately, the person who has the wrongest opinions is often you, which threatens to derail the whole project, frankly.
Yes, maybe so. But I think the listeners, such as they are, will be able in the coming weeks to really decide who is the cast iron guarantee of something being good or not, and who's the kind of airy-fairy, wandy-pandy, wussy.
Can we have Team Neil and Team James badges?
We could have an online poll.
Who is writer, Neil or James?
Yeah.
And can we campaign against each other?
I have already started.
Oh, why am I
negative campaigning, of course. I've taken a few TV spots out.
I could be plotting against you online. Anyway, we seem to be getting derailed already, which, during the first run of Unified the Review Theory, was a recurring theme, I think it's fair to say.
Yes.
So, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing a weekly podcast. No, I think bi-weekly we were going to aim for.
Quite curious weekly.
Wow, okay. So we will be doing a Bi-Curious weekly podcast where every week we review all aspects of human sexuality.
No, I don't think that's a good idea.
Well, why not?
Because it's... How many ways is that wrong?
Well, name me one way that's wrong.
Anyway... Yeah, so we'll be reviewing everything in the universe and things which don't actually exist in the universe but which we can conceive of.
Okay, so we're not just limiting it to everything that exists now.
No, well, I mean, that'd be daft, wouldn't it? We'd get through that in no time.
Everything that could possibly exist in any conceivable universe.
Yeah, so I mean, let's be fair to ourselves. We won't review things that are inconceivable.
Okay, no, that seems reasonable. So that's our one rule of thumb. We will not review theoretically impossible, logically inconceivable things.
We will, however, certainly review things of which we have no right to review, things which we have no knowledge of, things that we are just ill-informed about. They're certainly fair game.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they are bread and butter, really.
Bread and butter.
9 out of 10.
There you go. That's how it works, you see. We say something about a thing and then say a number, which signifies
yes, and,
the quality of that thing.
In the rare occasion where we disagree about anything, we will award an average mark based on the two conflicting marks.
It's not terribly complicated, to be honest.
No, I don't know why I even tried to explain that. All right, should we just get on and review some things then?
Yes, what are we going to review first, Neil?
Funky jingle goes here. We are going to review... Marvel's Avengers Assemble.
Marvel's Joss Whedon's Avengers Assemble.
Marvel's Joss Whedon's Avengers Assemble. Film which I saw recently.
Yeah, so did I, at the cinema, which is a very rare occurrence, almost as rare as one of these podcasts.
That's true, that's true. And one of the reasons that we haven't done a podcast in 2.5 years is also the reason we don't get to the cinema much, because we, curiously, we both dropped Sprogs about the same time, didn't we? And
yes.
They're quite time-consuming, the whole having a children thing.
And then I had another one about, what was it, 2.5 years ago?
Yeah, that really killed the podcasting.
Yeah.
Selfish jerk.
But, you know, he's about able to defend himself now, so we've released him in for a while, and now we're able to, like, go to cinema and then talk about it on the internet.
He's got to be about ready to start awarding things marks out of 10, hasn't he?
Yes, but I fear that might impinge on our objectivity. Oh, he's so cute. Yeah, why not? Let's give Iggle Piggle 10 out of 10. When really, he should only get 3 out of 10 because he's stupid.
Iggle Piggle?
Iggle Piggle, yes.
Oh, well, that's a review for another day.
Yes, although I think we've already done something very similar to that.
Regardless, Marvel's Joss Whedon's Avengers song. We're going to stay on topic if it fucking kills me, okay? Marvel's Joss Whedon's Avengers Assemble, the recent cinematic adaptation of Marvel's The Avengers comic. So, a little bit of background. This is a film that I spent about a month slagging off on the internet and saying
quite
how poorly
tediously.
It was. Sorry?
Quite tediously
and obnoxiously and self-righteously, and saying how I was boycotting because I was taking a high moral stance about Marvel's treatment of its creators generally, Jack Kirby, the creator of many of the Avengers characters in particular. But then I ended up...
Co-creator.
Well, yeah, okay. There's a whole other debate. Driving creative force, some would say. And, you know, he's the one that, you know, doesn't get to be in all the movies and get you know...
That's kind of partly because he's dead, though. It might be a bit wrong to...
I disagree.
It didn't stop them with Oliver Reed, though, did it?
You're not helping me stay on topic, James.
Sorry. Carry on. So, you were talking about something really interesting.
But I was just trying to set up the subject of this review. But actually, what's the point? Because everyone went to see it already, right? It's the highest grossing film ever, ever, ever. So
I think the whole world has seen The Avengers.
Why am I trying to explain what this movie is? It's a movie about a bunch of superheroes hitting things. And you know that because you already saw it. Because everyone already saw it.
Yes.
That's my introduction. What did you think of it, James?
So I'm going to give a slight kind of reviser on this because The Avengers... Avengers Assemble was the first film I'd ever seen in the cinema in 3D.
Okay.
Because I thought I should probably give it a go.
We went for the 2D option because I've made that mistake before.
Yeah, well, so my thought train basically went for the first 5 minutes. I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. I don't know why everyone's always complaining about 3D being so gloomy and unintelligible. And then I thought, wow, this is really gloomy and unintelligible. I can't work out what's going on the screen. And
oh, that's a shame.
A lot of the film seemed to be set at night, which really didn't help matters. So it's sort of like,
I don't think so. It must have just looked that way in 3D.
That's what it is. So, and you get, I mean, all of these things you get used to so very, very quickly. So, I mean,
yeah.
I think by the time the adverts had finished, I was already slightly bored of 3D. So,
yeah.
And then I just had to suffer through it for the rest of the film.
It's fundamentally quite boring. And I presume it wasn't, like, filmed in 3D, right? It was this sort of bullshit, terrible sort of 2.5D that they did. I saw Thor that way, and it's kind of... It looks almost like a sort of moving pop-up book. Like, stuff's on different levels, but it's not truly sort of three... The objects aren't three-dimensional themselves sort of thing.
I don't actually know or really care.
Well, if it looked terrible, then that's probably what it was.
It's just kind of hard to make out whether it was terrible or not, I think. But anyway, yeah. So my opinion of the film The Avengers, since you asked, is I thought it was quite good in that it was, you know, basically a comic on the screen, taking the good bits of comics and also some of the bad bits of comics. And and then...
Interesting.
that's the sort of thing the guy from FilmSpot does whenever he completely disagrees with what someone else is saying.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
You'll get your turn. Ranting at rant. But then, as soon as I'd left the cinema, it evaporated, basically.
Right,
so
yes.
It was very much... like popcorn. It was a popcorn film, in that if you go to the cinema and you have like one of their stupidly big tubs of popcorn, do you then have dinner afterwards? Because, you know, your stomach is actually full of matter, but not in any way sustaining food.
I would generally go to the cinema after consuming dinner. Or if I'd eaten a big thing of popcorn, no, I wouldn't want to eat dinner. I might have a sandwich when I got home. This is quite a boring, really specific avenue of conversation. But yeah, that's my feeling.
So the Avengers Assembles was like a big tub of popcorn.
So you felt you needed a sandwich afterwards?
Yeah. Yeah, so I did watch some Gordo.
Did you?
Yeah.
cool. Okay. So, but apart from... So generally you'd say a bit forgettable... fun but forgettable.
Yeah, essentially.
Okay. Yeah, I had a few more specific thoughts about it. Which am I allowed to be ranty McRant now?
Yes, rant away.
Okay. Well, I did agree that it was a fun film in some ways, and it had a lot of good to it. I'm not going to talk about the whole boycott / creators' rights issue, although that was sort of weighing on my mind. It just kind of meant that the film had to be a bit better to get me to forget about that stuff, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2 points down already, so it had to work a bit harder to be an awesome film. But I went in, you know, with an open mind and hoping and expecting to enjoy it, because I'd heard so many people say it was just the most amazing film ever. And, I mean, to be fair, I know a lot of comics nerds, so I may have been getting a slightly biased sample there, but I'd heard really, really positive things about the film, so I was hoping and expecting to enjoy it. And also, I love Joss Whedon to bits, right? That guy's amazing.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, you might hate Marvel for what they've done to Jack Kirby, but you owe something to Joss Whedon.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was partly my reasoning was, you know, A, it's Joss Whedon, you know, he's awesome and I love him. And B, you know, am I going to take the high ground on this film and say that I have, you know, a better knowledge of all the issues involved and a better sort of ethical sense than Joss Whedon? I don't know.
No, in every way, you are inferior.
In every way,
Joss
Whedon is better than me.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my thinking, really.
I think you also owe him for that picture you drew.
I have also drawn naked fan art of Joss Whedon. That makes it sound quite weird, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Why do you just put it like that? In the we'll try and put a link to my naked fan art of Joss Whedon on this post. How about that?
Are you ready to break the internet again?
It was a smash sensation, let me tell you. Anyway, so went in optimistic. And there was a lot of fun about it. You know, I like seeing the Hulk smash things as much as anyone. I thought there were some really, you know, significant problems with this film, and significant script problems and structural problems, which, you know, I would maybe not have expected, given what a fantastic writer Joss Whedon is. But that is possibly the problem when you have a film this big, you know, it doesn't really... I don't know how much the sort of individual creative vision can come through, necessarily, or...
Can you maybe give a specific of what you thought didn't work in The Avengers Assembled?
I certainly can. It was about the worst paced and the worst structured film I've ever seen in my life. It was a lot of nothing really happening for quite a long time.
The start was very disappointing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was Loki comes along and...
There wasn't a plot... What plot there was took forever to get moving and then stopped for half an hour while the characters all just sort of whined petulantly.
Which, and, you know, as I was saying, some of the bad things about comic criticism are some of the good things about comic.
Yes, no, absolutely. So it was, I guess, true in that respect, yes. But the plot issue, I didn't really understand it. I don't know if that's my failing or the film's. It didn't seem like there was much of a plot. It took a long time to get moving, then it stopped, and then there was just a great big fight, which should have been really awesome and exciting, but because of the pacing thing, like, it didn't build and build and sort of, you know, a series of escalating peaks. It was just took a long time, and then there was an amazing fight where aliens invaded New York, but because it was so big and so sort of you hadn't built up to it, it was just kind of boring. It was just kind of bang, bang, bang. Stuff exploding.
I mean, I suppose we can talk about all plot details because A, as you say, everyone in the world has now seen this film, and B, yellow and red M&M twat had no compunctions about showing plot details of the film I was just about to see in the pre-film
advert. That happened to us as well, and that actually loses it another 1 point automatically. Having fucking yellow, red, and M&M twat. It was the... I literally had my hands up in front of my face in the cinema saying, fucking stop it! What the fuck is this? This is the worst fucking thing!
I had exactly the same reaction, and it only deepens my animosity towards M&Ms. I had actually tried to buy a bag of M&Ms to take them to the cinema, and they weren't any, and I was so glad that I hadn't, because I would have had to throw them away in disgust at that point.
But you know, we shouldn't blame Peanut M&M for the crimes of his...
Peanut M&M is yellow M&M, surely, isn't he?
Peanut butter M&M, I mean.
Oh, yeah, well, no, I wouldn't have got any peanut butter M&M.
He is blameless in all this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. he doesn't even care what's going on in this stupid-ass country.
No.
But, so my point is, yeah, so we can talk about the end, and specifically those aliens, and...
Those stupid, fucking pointless aliens.
So any bit where it was just kind of, apart from the bit where he was in a van driving away, because that's what, you know, an all-powerful god would need to do, drive away in a van.
Mm.
Apart from that bit, I think any bit where it was them against Loki, there was a good kind of, you know, Silence of the Lambs-style vibe, and... A bit. I really enjoyed the attack on the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier.
I have some specific points about the attack on the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, right?
Oh, good.
First of all, why were they on a fucking helicarrier?
Because it looked so cool when it kind of took off out of the air.
It looked very cool when it took off out of the air, but this was kind of a problem I had with the whole film. It's summed up by that stupid helicarrier. If you're not familiar with the comics, right, and you don't know this stuff already, then why are they on a giant flying aircraft carrier? It makes absolutely no sense. It achieves nothing. They don't go up in the air for any reason, as far as I could tell, and it's just, the second you see it, you're like, well, someone's going to blow that shit out of the sky. You know, that's the most obvious sitting duck I've ever seen in my life, and well, so indeed it proved.
Maybe now, that's if you because think, if you think read the comics where it happens pretty much every month.
Let me just finish, right, okay? I'm just sort of things that made this not make sense as a film on its own, regardless of all the, you know, background material, just as a film on its own, things that make any sense. So my point about the helicarrier might seem like splitting hairs, but it's kind of, but then you have to ask, why did it turn invisible? Do you remember that bit where the helicarrier took off out there and said, wait till you see this shit, and it turned invisible?
It's because they can make a big
again for the whole film, and the fact that it could turn invisible was absolutely nothing to do with anything else in this movie. Wasn't
but
that weird?
In a lot of ways, actually, this film reminded me of early Marvel comics, in that it's basically, you can, when you had comics, you could draw whatever you wanted, so you would often just draw big, crazy-ass stuff, because you could. So, you know, like Jack Kirby would just put a giant, insane machine in the back of a panel.
Sure.
So, similarly, they have a budget, you know, the size of God, and supercomputers at the Pfizer. But so they can, if they want, take an aircraft carrier and then make it fly and turn invisible. And so they did. And I think, to be honest, there were not many people going, oh, but why is it doing that? They were kind of going, oh, wow, that looks pretty.
Well, I think I have a particular, you know, hatred for things that pointlessly turn invisible.
it's true. You're often talking about it.
Do you remember the James Bond film Die Another Day with his stupid invisible car?
Yeah, yeah.
That was the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And this just brought back horrible memories of James Bond's stupid invisible car. So I admit that maybe I'm being a little bit joyless there, but it just summed up this kind of, why is that there? You know, and just things that didn't make any sense in the story, you know? Or that, why did Loki attack the helicarrier?
Because he wanted to turn the Hulk into the Hulk, I guess, and make them all doubt themselves, and so they're the only team that could stop him.
But why did he get himself captured to do that? You know, he could have done his whole plan, leaving them the hell alone.
Yeah, but then they would have got together and, you know, stopped him, and he was trying to preempt that.
They wouldn't have ever found him. He got himself intentionally found, just so he could go through this insanely elaborate way to turn the Hulk into the Hulk, which just didn't seem to make any sense to me on any level. And none of the characters seem to be, you know...
I guess Loki's just a better strategist than you are, yeah?
Well, not... Well, didn't work out very well for him, did it?
No, but, yeah, I mean, to be honest, something that did niggle me is why he needed the aliens, or in the same way, why did the film need the aliens? Why did he need a big alien army?
I have no idea. I mean, the aliens army are not just from a sort of structure standpoint. Again, the alien army really annoyed me because, and to be fair, full disclosure, I did miss the first 10 seconds of the film because I was away going to the toilet. So, unless they were all shown doing something really amazing and awesome in the first 10 seconds, they were just kind of referred to and talked about a lot for the first hour and a half, and then they all suddenly just drop out of the sky and start shooting Manhattan. But I really didn't get what the point of them was, or, you know, that you didn't have a chance to sort of get to know that threat or have it build or know what their motivations were.
Are you sure it was only 10 seconds? I'm pretty sure there was a good 10, 15 minutes of just kind of a fly-on-the-wall style life with the aliens at the start of the film. You know,
I did have a really big wee.
It was quite harrowing. It was about a young single mother alien and her struggle to survive inside
a
big
flying
$1 million
alien baby. All right, I'm just saying that it was kind of, you know, you don't tell me there's a great big threat hanging over all our heads and then just sort of leave that there for an hour and a half and not do anything with it, you know, and then suddenly smash up Manhattan. It's what I'm saying. There was no sort of there was no shape to the story. You know what I mean? It was just flat and then huge. There was no curve. Is that making any sense?
It is. I'm not sure I completely agree with you, but I think certainly the end was a bit of an anticlimax, as it was just big CGI monsters doing what big CGI monsters do and getting smashed up a bit. And really, seriously, if they're... Because they were planning to invade a planet.
Yes.
And they unleashed about maybe 60 flying alien men. Maybe 100 if we're being kind, who seemed eminently defeatable by even the lamest, by say someone like Hawkeye, who could fire special arrow.
Yes.
And they were planning to not just the world, they were planning to take over the universe.
Yes.
With this force.
I mean, I guess they had a lot more lame alien dudes on hang gliders sort of waiting to come through.
But why were they waiting? What were they waiting for? For someone to...
Because the most awesome power in the whole universe could only open this tiny little hole at time.
Yeah.
I guess.
And you think, okay, well, there's a chance. I know it's a small chance because, you know, we've put a force shield around this thing and you know how they work out. But there's a chance that someone might at some point close this portal. So maybe we should try and get as many people through as quickly as we can. And then do something more than just kind of smash up the public library. And
yes,
menace a few office workers.
I take your points on alien strategy.
So, aliens were rubbish. End of the film.
Aliens were rubbish. And did you stick around for the bit after the first bit of credits?
No, I didn't. And I'll tell you for why. Because credits were really boring.
Oh, okay.
Well, what happened?
Well, you know, this just speaks to the thing of sticking things in that, you know, because they're in the comics, but they don't actually make any sense or are, you know, within the context of the film. You got to see who, like, the big bad alien was, who was behind it all, right? And assuming you were not familiar with lots of Marvel comics already, it was just another fucking alien, you know? It sort of, you got to see that there was another alien, and that was supposed to be a big dramatic sort of twist ending. And I don't think that is really good enough. Particularly because you've kind of alluded to this character through the film, and then they don't actually turn up until after the credits, which seems a bit weird to me. And then when they do, it kind of carries no dramatic weight whatsoever. It's just, oh, the aliens were actually working with another alien who looks kind of the same and a bit different. It just fell completely flat for me, that, and sort of spoke to the problem with the film of making people who wanted to see stuff in comics they loved on screen be delighted to see those things on screen, but just not working as a standalone sort of thing on its own merits, I felt.
Yeah.
I am sounding really joyless now, aren't I?
But, okay, to take a good point of it, and one point I was very much enjoying myself, just seeing, you know, Thor and Iron Man and Captain America having a big scrap on screen. That was pretty cool, I must admit.
Yeah, let's talk about things that were awesome, okay? Things that were good, because I am sounding like a miserable fuck and I hate myself right now. There was a lot of good things.
I think I might have overestimated how long it would take for the listening public to decide which one of us is the culturally savvy, cued in one.
I thought there were a lot of things to like about the film. I thought the Hulk was amazing.
Yeah.
The Hulk was super, you know, likeable and just well done and a great performance. And it was just great to see the Hulk smashing things up and punching
Thor.
Yes. That was very cool.
That was very cool.
Yeah, and they were they're all great characters, and I have enjoyed the Marvel films to date generally, but they just didn't, I don't know, it seemed sort of a lack of chemistry when they all got together, or there wasn't really much of a sort of character story going on.
Yeah, but that's why they have their own films for the characters.
I guess it would be hard to do. Yeah,
I do feel bad for Gwyneth Paltrow in that, you know, Natalie Portman was obviously too busy to spend 5 minutes being a superhero girlfriend, whereas she wasn't.
That here's the thing, right? They all have their own stories, right? And they all have their own movies going into this. But again, that kind of meant that the sort of getting them all together in the first place was just intensely boring, you know? Like, the getting the band together sequence should be the most exciting part of any film, you know? It's one of the great things, you know, getting a bunch of disparate characters together to, and seeing how they play off each other. And this was just, you know, Nick Fury going around and handing people folders. And they would look at the folder and then come and, you know, get on the project. It just seemed really insanely boring.
I thought we were being positive now.
Sorry, they were nice folders.
Manila. Mm.
I liked all the characters individually. I just thought it was quite boring. Oh, sorry, I'm... No.
I enjoyed it, as I say, I enjoyed it when I was in it, but then I had this very odd experience when I came out, and I wonder if this is maturity, in that I've been to see, the last one I've been to see at the cinema was Shane, with Michael Fassbender and
Fassbender.
Yeah, which had no giant green men hitting things, no aliens, not even a single alien, just quite a lot of internet porn.
I don't even understand why you'd even go and see that.
Well, no, but, I mean, I came out of it and, you know, I kind of thought about the film and I, not specifically the internet pornography bits of it, but, you know, some of the shots in it were so beautifully done and some of the, you know, the characters were believable even if they're... I just wonder whether maybe I should stop watching brainless superhero films.
Oh, shut up. Do you know, 10 years ago you said to me that you were done reading superhero comics because it was a moribund art form.
Yeah, I did say that, didn't I?
You said the exact phrase, moribund art form. Do you read any superhero comics now, 10 years later?
Okay.
I'm saying, you know, it's not a question about growing things. If things are done well, then they can be enjoyed by people of all ages. I have never outgrow seeing dudes punching other dudes through.
You're very wise, and I didn't, as you say, I enjoyed Thor immensely, I enjoyed Captain America a fair amount.
I think it just wasn't that great of a film. That's all there is to it. It just wasn't that great, and that's why you didn't enjoy it as much as you'd hoped.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So, yes, I went in thinking, hoping it would be good, and as I say, it had to do a lot to win me over and sort of stop me feeling terribly guilty for abandoning all my moral principles to go and see it just because I wanted to. But it just didn't, and so I ended up feeling probably harsher towards it than maybe I should have, but I kind of felt like I abandoned my lovely, cosy moral high ground for nothing, you know, and that annoys me, because I do like an artificial feeling of superiority.
But you got about a half-hour rant out of it, so...
That's true. So, yeah, I managed to also alienate any potential listeners to our new podcast by ranting about how much I hate something they probably enjoyed.
Yeah. Well, okay. That's the thing. So many people have seen it, and I'm guessing a lot of them do actually enjoy it. And so, fair play to them, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't want to be the miserable old sod. If you enjoyed it, good for you. I had a few issues myself, and that's my problem. Should we give it some marks out of 10, then?
Let's put this thing to death.
Okay, so I'd say 5 out of 10, because I've thought it was distinctly average. There were really enjoyable parts of it, but there were things... Okay, no, 6 out of 10, I'll be generous. But then it loses 2 points for the Jack Kirby thing and 1 point for the fucking red and yellow M&Ms ruining the movie before it started. So that knocks it down to 3 out of 10.
I'm going to not blame it for M&Ms. And I don't feel as strongly as you do about Jack Kirby. Because, you know, Stan Lee got money for it. Probably. He was in it, wasn't he?
Not helping your case there. Okay. Anyway.
But that's obviously another discussion. So I would give it 7 out of 10.
Okay. That's an A.
That's an A?
Are you sure about that?
What do you mean that's an A?
That's an A. You know, according to my university marking scheme, 70% is an A. So you just gave the Avengers an A.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm a more lenient marker. The grade curve on Unified Review Theory does not follow that on exam marking.
Well, that's how I've been scoring things all these years.
So yeah, what's a 10, then?
Sorry?
What's a 10, then?
Nothing's a 10.
We've had 10s. No, you gave toilet paper a 10, didn't you?
I did give toilet paper a 10. That's the one 10 I've ever given a 10. We're going off topic again. So 3 out of 10, 7 out of 10, that's average 5 out of 10, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Not fairer than that.
There you go. So now, all and sundry, if anyone is ever to review the Avengers in any form of medium again, they must give it that mark.
Because it is the correct mark.
Because that's the correct mark. That is how good the Avengers is.
That is how good it is. It's going in the log. It has been scientifically established and tested. And yes, that's it. 5 out of 10. Discussion over. You can all stop talking about the Avengers now.
Good.
Can we
stop talking about the Avengers? What a relief.
I'm relieved to have got that out of my system.
Okay, good. Should we do our quick review?
Okay, super quick, super fast, super sexy review.
Quick review.
This is to kind of as a sorbet between the main reviews. We're just going to throw something out there and then throw out a comment and then not digress and talk about, I don't know, popcorn for half an hour. So, super quick review, Neil. How good are Star Bars?
Star Bars, the chocolate bars with sort of ground up peanuts in?
They're kind of like a cross between a peanut butter, a Kit Kat, and a Boost Bar.
Okay, but at the risk of digressing, the reason is, because the only reason I ate one of these is because when we did a podcast 3 years ago or so, we asked people to tell us what we should review, and someone said Star Bars, and so I ate one 3 years ago, and that is the last time I had a Star Bar. So I just about remember what they were like. That makes it sound like they were terrible, if I haven't eaten one in the intervening 3 years, but I actually really enjoyed it. I just don't eat chocolate anymore, because I can't... So it brings back painful memories to talk about. But it was a lovely thing. I enjoyed it. It was sort of like a Boost, like you say, but with peanuts. Awesome.
Yeah.
8 out of 10.
First time I ever had one was because of this podcast. So I think that was the most positive thing to come out of the whole endeavour.
We both had nice chocolate bars.
Yeah. But yeah, 8 out of 10. It's awesome. It's like a Boost bar with like peanut butter.
It's incredible. Incredible. 8 out of 10. So, good. Like 30% better than the Avengers.
I think that stands the reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I want one right now.
Star Bars.
Okay, sweet. That was a good quick review. Let's do them all like that. Let's wrap this shit up.
Let's get while the getting's good.
Okay.
May I have your attention? Your opinions may be dangerously wrong. Please keep listening out for new ones. Thank you.
Okay, last review of the evening is Love Film.
Love Film, the internet-based CD, DVD rental company.
Rental by post.
Yeah.
And are on streaming, I guess, these days. People are more than dial-up, more than broadband.
Love Film, in case anyone isn't familiar with it, although it's, you know, fairly widely used, right? It's this quaint thing we have in Britain, because we're not quite all up to speed on Netflix yet, whereby we rent DVDs through the post from a company that you get to have like a couple a month, depending on what package you're on. I guess you can get like 20 a month, and you know, lots of video games and people to come around and rub your feet while you play them. But I'm on the cheap one where you get, I think, two
That's love something else.
Lovefeet.com.
Robots.
Yes, so you are a member of this fine thing, which we are not in any way being sponsored by?
No, alas. In good standing for many, many years. And you fairly recently joined it, didn't you?
Well, we joined it once a few years ago and then gave up because the DVDs were sitting on our mantelpiece being unwatched for several months at a time while we paid for the privilege of looking at them and feeling slightly guilty every single day. And so we decided to knock that on the head. But we recently started trying again because, I don't know, there were just a load of films I wanted to see, and the kids a bit older, we actually sort of sometimes stay up past 9 o'clock these days. Sometimes.
But at the same time, can't really go to the cinema, so.
But at the same time, still can't really go to the cinema, exactly. And because there's quite a quick turnaround now between things coming out in the cinema and things then being on DVD, it's actually quite, you know, I'll be seeing the adverts for a film I really want to see, and I'll just stick it on the Love Film List, and by the time I ever think about it again, it's actually out on DVD, so it worked quite nicely.
Yeah, no, it's good. I think, to be honest, there are so many ways of watching things these days that I think the key benefit of Love Film is the way it affects your viewing patterns rather than the fact that you can get discs from them.
How do you mean? Would you like to elaborate on that point?
I would love to elaborate. So basically, if you have the internet, you could at any point say, oh, I'd like to watch this film, and then go and watch it.
Yes.
Whereas with Love Film, as you say, you have the disc sitting there being paid for, and so you actually have to, you know, make the effort to sit down and think, right, I'm going to watch this film now.
And it is extraordinarily telling how true that turn of phrase is. You have to make the effort to sit on the sofa and actually watch a film. In the old days, that would have been considered a very lazy activity, but that act does genuinely feel like quite an effort these days.
But I think, I mean, if there are no other like external forces acting on you, and you were just going to sit down and watch something, you would probably just turn on E4 and see that it was an episode of How I Met Your Mother that you'd seen many times before, but you would watch it again anyway.
That is eerie how much you describe my default mode. If ever I don't have anything else to do, I will probably be watching an old episode of How I Met Your Mother while idly checking Twitter. That's my zero state, you know.
Whereas, as I say, this does lead you to actually watch a film, which is quite an undertaking, because they're fairly long films. I didn't used to be this.
They're like longer than an hour. They're longer than the average episode of How I Met Your Mother.
How do they get away with it? And not only that, but also you sometimes feel kind of, you hear about something that some, you know, has been really well praised and yet isn't the green man hitting buildings.
Hmm.
And you decide to give it a go, you put it on your list, and then you don't do anything on your list, so it turns up.
Hmm.
And then you kind of feel that you have to watch it, and then you watch it, and then you realise why everyone says it was so bloody good.
Yes, that's a very good way of describing it, actually, yes. Since we did rejoin Love Film, I've seen several of the greatest films I've ever seen in my life, and I'm hugely grateful to have finally watched, and, you know, wouldn't, even if they'd been on telly, probably wouldn't have bothered, you know? Because there's other...
Because when you can at any time,
your
don't.
Your mother was probably on the other channel.
Yeah.
It's the new friends.
So I think in that respect, it's really good. So now it's like, some films I've seen, The Arbor, which is a very depressing film about life on a council estate, drug taking, all of that sort of stuff, but just amazingly made. And there's just no way, even if I'd recorded it, it just would have sat there and sat there and sat there. But I knew that I couldn't, you know, get to watch BFS 2. Uncut until I'd seen that and sent it back. And
that sounds amazing.
It's really good. You should totally watch it.
So the guilt is the key factor. The guilt is, in a way, what you're paying for. You're paying for it something to sit on your mantelpiece and nag you into watching it.
Yeah, in the same way that people join the gym. I mean, they could, if they wanted, just go and run around for free. But if they know they're paying for it, then they'll feel they have to get the most out of it, so they'll actually go and do it.
Or they'll just sit around hating themselves.
So as you experience the first time around, it can go one or two ways.
True. We're on a good streak at the moment, but it can go badly wrong, yes.
All it takes is one
I think, do you know what it took that did us in the first time?
Yeah.
I think it was, well, I hate to, you know, I hate to point fingers, but I think it was because I let Di have unrestricted access to the love helmet. It was a 1-2 punch of Mystic River shortly after Million Dollar Baby, which, both of which sort of sat unwatched for several months because we couldn't bring ourselves to watch them. And then when we did, I wanted to kill myself. And indeed, Clint Eastwood. So,
you see, I've never actually told my wife there is such a thing as the internet. So
probably the best policy, yes. It, yeah, so you have to... You can get yourself stuck in a bit of a love film quagmire, but careful balancing of the high priority function helps, I find. Like, if you have just had a bit of a swerve into Million Dollar Baby territory, then if you quickly whack on a bit of Muppets or something, then you can...
Pack it with ball pass or something.
Yeah. Well, just stick in something that involves Hulk punching people, you know. And, you know, because some films you know you're going to probably watch a few days after they come because they're terrible, stupid films. And they don't tend to sit on the mantelpiece quite as long. Because we're basically terrible, stupid people, right?
Yeah. We work hard, we just want to relax and not think too hard.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's a powerful tool, but you must be careful to use it for good...
I think, as well, sometimes it's useful to look back to see how far we've come. So, do you remember what renting a video was like in the early 90s?
I do, indeed, yes. It was awesome.
It was, well, in a way it was awesome.
It was amazing. Wandering around video shops looking at videos was one of my favourite things. We would spend hours doing it.
That is true, actually.
It was so much my favourite thing that I wanted to go and work in a video shop so that I could do it all the time.
Yes, actually that wasn't fair. Although you would get there and then they wouldn't have to do anyone.
No, I mean, from an actual, you know, effectiveness point of view, it was terrible, of course. They never had any
and
good
that low level fear that you were going to somehow break it and have to pay £7,000.
Yeah, so. That's true. They never had any good films. They were always out anyway, and you always ended up watching terrible films that you let your stupid friend choose.
And you're generally drunk when you went down there, so.
Yes. And you'd always end up getting like 5. Because
there was an offer.
Because there was an
offer. There were 5 films that no one would ever want to rent. So, but, you know, there are 5 of them.
Yeah. But as I say, I've nothing but joyous memories of this. I mean, it sounds terrible describing it, but I remember it inordinately fondly.
Very true. But then you don't have the perusing the shelves for, you know, the whole shelf of Speed 2 or whatever, but you do have managing your list, which, you know, for anyone with any kind of slightly obsessive compulsive tendencies, can be a lot of fun.
I guess so. I find that quite tedious. Actually, comparing the two is quite interesting. I think, on balance, I watch much, much better quality films the love film way than the wandering drunkenly round video shop way. But I think I enjoyed that way much more. Or it just was funner, you know. Maybe it's just because I was drunk all the time. Maybe that's what we're actually talking about.
But, and I'm sure this must appeal to you, Neil, you also get to rate your films that you've seen, and then you can look back over every single film you've seen in the last 3 years or whatever and see how good they were.
I guess so. I never bother rating things on Love Film and such, because I assume that my ratings will be aggregated into a giant pool of ratings with other yahoos whose opinions are meaningless. So
yeah, but you've got a record of your own, so at some point these can just, you know, if we ever start falling behind on reviewing everything in the world ever, then I've got a big chunk of reviews that can just, you know, play straight into it.
I save my reviewing for Unified Review Theory. I keep it where it belongs.
I feel that, you know, it makes Unified Review Theory more exciting if I'm also doing a little side reviewing. You know?
You disgust me. And I am judging you angrily.
Good.
This
so,
podcast
I think...
is over.
Oh, this is getting into it. You know, people are going to be waiting eagerly for the next 2.5 years for the next podcast.
So. Shall we stick to a 2.5 yearly schedule?
I think so. At least we're regular then.
So a regular as clockwork update schedule. We'll be back in autumn 2014. 2015, in fact. Talking about the Avengers 2, probably. Yeah, I don't know.
Yes, I'm sure nothing will know what happened to you now. Would overwrite the Avengers 2 at that point. So, love film, anyway.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, we were talking about something, weren't we? Love film. It is handy. I'll give it 6.5 out of 10.
I'm going to give it 8.1 out of 10.
Oh, well, you can work out what the average is then.
You said 6.5, didn't you?
Mr. Fancy Pants Accountant.
7.3.
Okay, yeah, that sounds fair, yeah. That sounds about right to me. That's a strong A, yeah.
Okay.
Love film is good,
love
and
film,
we are in no way endorsed by it.
But not as good as Starbucks.
No, Starbars.
You do sponsor us.
Starbars win, and if anyone wants to send us a case of free Starbars, oh, that would really hurt actually, because I really can't eat them. So fuck.
Do
you.
It.
So fuck
do
you.
It.
Fuck you, Starbars. I don't want your stupid Starbars.
Do it, and I'll go around and record him, and I'll eat them all in front of his astonished face.
I am going to murder you in your sleep.
Good. So that was it for this edition of Unified Review Theory, and we've covered the gamut from superheroes to renting films about superheroes to chocolate bars.
Can we like try and review something slightly more cultural, or
I think maybe that'd be a good idea.
Highbrow next week.
Yeah.
Rather than
maybe a galaxy bars.
Okay. Yeah. Galaxy caramel. Nice. Yeah, okay, that concludes our reviews for this evening. We will be back in 2 weeks with some more reviews of stuff. If there's
2 weeks, Neil, that's a bit of a bold claim.
I'm sticking my neck on the line, I'm saying it. We're going to be back every 2 weeks from now on, forever, until the end of time, because there's a lot of stuff to cover.
Yeah, we are running fairly behind on schedule, I think it's fair to say. I would say, in the last 2.5 years, maybe more things have come into being that we need to review.
Really?
So not only is there the backlog is growing.
Oh, God. This is just stressing me out now. Can we start... We need to figure out a more efficient chunk of it. We'll just review, like, entire nations and races at once.
The Earth and everything upon it.
The Earth and everything upon it. Balls. Yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks if you care to... I can't be bothered. Care to follow us on Twitter, then you'll probably figure it out.
Yes. Well, if you're aware of this, you probably already followed us on Twitter.
That's true.
I can't imagine how else we're going to find out about it.
Yes. No, that's very true. Cool. So, yes, we'll be back in a couple of weeks, and we'll talk about more things.
Hooray!
Hooray.
All right.
Bye!
Unified Review Theory, an oasis of certainty in a sea of unranked people, objects, and concepts.